You may be seated. And welcome to week 5 of our Folk Theology series. My name is Nathan. I'm the pastor here at Genesis Boyne. And over the course of this series, what we've been having you guys do is we've been having you ask questions. We've been answering some myths, but we've had you guys ask questions. Whatever you want to know about life, theology, the Bible, just pretty much whatever. So today is our question and answer sermon. This kind of picks up with a great tradition. Jamie's done this before. Daryl's done this before. Just answered some of you guys' questions because they come up. And so it's great to be able to just dig into those. Now, the thing is, we had over 80 questions submitted, which means we are not going to get to every single one, but we are going to try to get to as many as possible. So we're going to cut the chatter. We're just going to get going. Question number one. We have talked about a lot of different myths. What about the saying, let go and let God? That's our first question. So is let go and let God, is it true? Is it theological folklore? And this is a great transition from where we've been the last couple of weeks to where we want to go with this question and answer. And the reason that I didn't answer this one was because it's really tricky. It's not overtly fact, and it's not overtly fiction. It could go either way, and it just depends on how you interpret it. So if you interpret it in a healthy manner, this idea could mean that we're supposed to let go of control and let God work through us. So many of us, I know this is like one of the biggest things that I have, I struggle with, is I want to take control from God. I feel like I know better than God, so I'm always like, God, okay, you handle it. I got it. It's all yours, God. Okay, now I'm going to take it back. Now it's mine. It's mine. You don't know what you're doing. I do that all the time. My wife can totally support this, that I just continually grab it back because I think I know better than God. I don't allow him to always lead my life. So, yes, it is healthy for us, healthy for me to let go of control of my life and let God lead. However, if you interpret let go and let God in an unhealthy manner, what it often takes, it turns it into more of a spiritual inertia, that we get lazy because, you know, I don't really have to bother with anything. I mean, God's in control, so why should I do anything? And that's just totally wrong. And the Bible tells us we're not supposed to be passive. We're supposed to be active. We're supposed to engage. We are supposed to, as the Great Commission says, this is Matthew 28, therefore, go and make disciples. Go is active. Make is active. Make disciples of all the nations. Baptize them. That's active. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Teach them. That's active. To obey. Active. All of the commands I have given you. So in that sense, we're not supposed to be passive. We're not supposed to sit back and be like, you know, God will figure this whole thing out. I don't ever have to tell anybody. I don't ever have to invite anybody. I don't ever have to do anything. No, we're going. We're doing. We're telling. The idea of letting go and letting God just handle everything, it's unhealthy, and it's just lazy. I mean, it's kind of like if you said, oh, you know, I want to be a lawyer. But you never actually bothered to, you know, apply for a job or even go to law school. You just sat at home, you played some video games, you waited for someone to knock on the door and offer you a position to a law firm. I mean, theoretically, it could happen, but it's a long shot. So if our spiritual lives are like that, they're not going to go very far. We're always going to be spiritual children. So to answer this question, to let go and let God, it's not in the Bible. But depending on how you interpret it, it could be either a spiritually healthy thing or it could be something that is a theological folklore. All right, question number two. What do we got? How do you feel about the right to bear arms? I think that it's wrong and it's cruel to rip arms off of bears just to protect yourself. I don't even think that that sounds particularly useful. I would probably use a gun instead. But like, some of you guys really need to learn how to spell. So we'll skip that one. Let's go to the next question. What does the Bible say about gun control? Now, that's a better question. And it actually fits into another question that got asked. And it's question number 4. What does the Bible say about can believers smoke marijuana in Colorado? I see where you guys are going with this. Let's keep rolling. There's another question. Question number 5, different personalities allow for different relationships. What does the Bible say about addressing parenting issues and or concerns within our congregation? Are you seeing a theme here? This is dozens of questions that fit a very similar theme. Question number 6, what does the Bible say about should we give on the gross or should we give on the net? And my old pastor said, well, it depends. Do you want to be blessed by God on the gross or on the net? That's pretty much up to you. But all of these questions and dozens of others that you ask, they all fit into the same category. It's a category where there are no exact answers for these questions. So, obviously, they didn't have guns back in the day, much to the chagrin of the band Guns N' Roses. It's one of those things, we didn't have that. How do we answer that question? And it's true, there are some theological absolutes. So like 10 commandments. Commandment number 1, it comes from Exodus 20. And it says, you must not have any other God but me, period. I wanted to make sure to emphasize every single one of those words. They're very important. No other gods, period. That is 1,000% always and forever true. Okay? That's 1,000% always and forever true. If you have anything else in front of God, it is not going to work out well in your life. But other issues are tougher. We've seen a couple of those questions. Let's keep pulling some more up. Question number 7. Everybody needs to eat, but when does eating become gluttony? Question number 8. We are called to care for our bodies, but when does caring for your body become pride about your body? Question number 9. How much time on my phone is too much? These questions, like, they don't have specific answers in the Bible. So to answer our boundaries, to try to figure out what is right and what is wrong, what do we do in these areas? The answer is in the Bible. It's we are to pray. 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, never stop praying. Never stop. Great verse to memorize. Only 3 words, but very important for us to remember. Never stop praying. That we're to seek God's will. We're to seek where he desires us to be, what we're to do, what we're to say. Proverbs 3:5-6 says it this way, that we are to trust in the Lord with all of our hearts and not depend on our own understanding. This ties in with the first question that we asked. Sometimes we seek to take control. We decide our own understanding is the way to go. That we're to trust the Lord with all of our heart and not depend on our own understanding. I know that's hard. Verse 6, seek his will in all that you do. Not some of what you do, not a few things of what you do, not only in the important things of what you do, all that you do. And he will show you the path in which to take. So in the end, I don't care if you're the most fanatic gun owner in the world. If you pray about it and God says, you need to get rid of those. Instead of trusting your own understanding, you trust God. Because if you trust your own understanding, you are putting guns above God. And we already said, don't put anything above God. It is a bad idea. And the thing is, I know what you want because it's what I want. I want to be able to check a box. Love checking boxes. Love making lists. Love checking boxes. You want me to say, if you give 10%, you are correct. Okay, check box. If you own a gun, you are doing the right thing. Okay, I can check a box. They look at the box. They check it. It's done. Love checking boxes. But what happens when I do that? What happens when we do that? We start leaving God out. The thing is, it becomes I'm following a rule. It's a head issue. It's not a heart issue. It's not a relationship with God issue. It's not we're following, doing what God says. So if you ignore any of those things, no matter what it is, you're losing your communication with God. We should always be in close communication. Where we should be going, what we should be doing. It doesn't matter if it's your job. It doesn't matter if it's a relationship. Should I quit this job? I don't like this job. Well, God says to stay there. It doesn't matter how much you dislike the job. You've got to learn to follow God because in the end, he has your best interests at heart. So if you ignore anything, if you put anything above God, I can tell you from personal experience, it will not go well. So that's the answer to every single one of those questions and about a dozen other questions that we didn't get up there. You just have to continue to be in communication and then do what God says and trust that he is good. Trust that he has your best interests in heart. And so speaking of communication, that kind of leads us to another question. Question number 10. How do you get a response from God? And another person said it this way. Question number 11. I was in pain, and I prayed to God to take away the pain, and nothing happened. Why didn't God listen to? Why didn't God answer my prayers? And there were a lot of questions in this area about whether or how God responds to prayer. And there's a little bit of a misdirection within these questions, because the assumption of the asker is that God didn't answer or respond to the prayer. That the person was in pain, and they prayed to God to take away the pain, and then nothing happened. But that's impossible. Something happened. Either the pain went away, or the pain didn't go away. So something happened. You're getting a response from God. It may just not be the one that you were hoping for, which obviously from the question is that the pain would go away. And sometimes that's tough, but it goes back to the discussion we were just having, is seeking God's direction, trusting God with all of our hearts. And the best example of this really comes from Jesus himself. The night before his crucifixion, he is in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's praying, and this is what he's talking to God about. This is Luke 22, that Jesus walked away about a stone's throw, and he knelt down, and he prayed. And this is what he prayed. He said, Father, if you are willing, please, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet, I want your will to be done, not mine. That Jesus himself is pleading with his Father. He is praying. He is communicating. He is asking, God, please take away the torture. Take away the agony that the crucifixion is going to be. But in the end, he says, I have to defer. It's not what I want. It's what you want. It's what brings about the kingdom. And what happens? God doesn't take it away. It is within hours. Jesus is captured. He is led off. He is beaten. He is whipped. He is mocked. And he is nailed to a cross where he slowly and painfully dies. That was the answer. Jesus asked for it. And he's got the best connection. Son of God. The answer is not always what we hope for. But much like Jesus, we have to continue to say, God, above all, here's my request, but above all, I want your will to be done, not my will. Okay, so that was a little bit of a heavy one. What do we got for question number 12? Does God give you more than you can handle? Oh, sorry, we're on question number 13. Does God give you more than you can handle? This question came up every single week, and so just an FYI, we actually discussed this one in our April 8th sermon. That was the 20 inches of snow, so hardly anybody was here. But we did discuss that. So you can listen to that myth and like the 20 other myths that we did at genesiswired.com. So if you guys want to hear any of the 20 myths, why would a loving God send good people to hell? Does God give you more than you can handle? I mean, just so many different topics that we covered. Those are all at genesiswired.com. So let's do another one. What do we got? Do you play Fortnite? No, it's not really my thing. That was easy. All right, let's do another one. Do you play Mario Kart? Yes, I do. And to be quite honest, I will dominate any of you guys. I am not even joking. I am dead serious with my Mario Kart. So I will just destroy you hardcore. That's just a pastoral promise. All right, question number 15. What's your favorite ice cream and cookie? Okay, we are to the theologically deep questions, apparently. I'm glad that out of anything in the world, this is what somebody wants to know. Fair enough. chocolate chip cookies. Jenny makes a killer chocolate chip cookie. We've been making them en masse and then putting them in the freezer and then eating them frozen. It is delish. Ice cream, I'm more of a milkshake person. I've been hankering for a milkshake for like 3 straight weeks now. But yeah, not really much ice cream, but I love milkshakes. Cookies and cream, maybe like a strawberry, something like that. Okay, do we have any serious questions? How can I fully believe in God's love for me? Okay, yeah, that's a serious one. This one also fits in with another question, though. Question number 17. When can we really believe in God? So how can we fully understand his love? When can we really believe in God or believe in his love for me? And I'm going to say something that is probably a little bit more, can be controversial. Like, I don't know if we really fully can. And I got that from Ephesians 3, well, just from common sense, but also from Ephesians 3, 18 and 19. And Paul's talking, and he says, may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high, how deep is his love for us. And may you experience the love of Christ, though it's too great to understand fully. It's like, I know. How are we supposed to understand a God that is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-present? Like, we're just these little teeny tiny finite minds. Like, we can't. It's too great to understand fully. And this comes up time and time again throughout the Bible. Abraham struggles with this. Moses struggles with this. Peter struggles with this. Obviously, Thomas, doubting Thomas, he struggled with this. I have no doubt that this is going to come up in our lives. But this question also then ties into a whole nother question, which I think is getting a little more into the root of where we're trying to get to, which is question number, I believe it's 18. Okay, how can I give it all to God? Now, I feel like I've given some. How do I give it all to God? And we actually talked about a verse that I'm getting ready to do. And we've talked about it, I don't know, for 2 straight months. And it's a verse that if you've been here for 2 straight months, you probably haven't memorized, which I think is good. It's a great verse to memorize. Romans 10, 9 and 10. So we'll start off with verse 9. If you openly declare that Jesus is Lord, that's 1. And you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that's 2. You will be saved, period, end of sentence, nothing else. If you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And the pushback that I've got from this verse when we've talked about it is, I don't know, that just sounds too easy. Like, are you positive that that's the whole kit and caboodle? And I can say yes, because Paul doubles down in the next verse, which we usually don't read. Verse 10, it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God. So that's number 1, believing in your heart. And it is by, number 2, openly declaring your faith that you are saved. Paul wanted to make sure you did not misread this. It had to be super important because paper was crazy valuable back then. You didn't just write things twice in a row just for the fun of it. He wanted to make sure we did not miss this. Put it twice in a row. And my guess is that, you know, some of you guys have already done this, but you're still like, yeah, but I don't feel like I've given it all to God. And so it ties into yet another question. You start to see themes build within the questions that you guys are asking. Question number 19. Are you lit for Jesus every day? And then dabs. So, okay, like everybody over there is like, you are totally embarrassing me. I know what dabbing is. Good grief. Do you want me to dab? Okay, are you all going to dab with me? All right, 1, 2, 3, down. There we go. I don't know why that was in the question, but apparently it was important to whoever asked it. The answer is, am I lit for Jesus every day? I mean, obviously I'm the pastor. I have to be the most lit, right? No, I am usually a bit of a mess. This week on Monday, I was major grumpy pants. I ran into somebody, and I was just like, I do not want to talk. I am grumpy pants. I am not lit for Jesus today. I basically just want to axe murder some people. So, like, no, I'm not. I'm a mess, and Jenny can confirm this, and the elders can confirm this. Like, I get into some funks. And so it's just like, no, I'm not. Nobody is, which leads to question 20, and I think question 20 gets to the heart of the matter. What do Christians do when they sin after they've been saved. It's building. It's building. You can see it. How do I fully believe in God's love for me? Because I'm still sinning. How can I give it all to God? I feel like I've only given part of it. Am I lit for Jesus every day? I don't feel like I am. Am I doing something wrong? What do Christians do when they start to sin after they've been saved? In fact, okay, let's build one more question on top of this. Question 21. I've accepted God, but I still do things I know are wrong. And I feel so guilty, but I just can't control myself. So will I still go to heaven? Now we're to the core of the matter. I'm doing things, and I'm messing up. And is God going to love me? Am I still going to go to heaven? Am I okay? Is this a thing? Because it just doesn't feel like God would honestly love somebody as gross and messed up as we are. I must not have given it my all. I keep messing up. I should be able to overcome this. I have the power of Jesus in my life. But the thing is, if it makes you feel better, everybody else is going through the same things. Most of us are just going through it in different manners. Some of them are public. Some of them are private. Some of them are head issues. Some of them are heart issues. Like, we're all struggling. Some of us may be struggling with alcoholism. Others of us are struggling with pride. Some of us may be struggling with gambling. Some of us may be struggling with greed. Some of them are easy to point out. Some of them, you'll never know that the person is dealing with it. It's all in here. But we all struggle. And the Bible is really living proof of this exact thing. That for all of eternity, we can go back and we can read in the Bible, Moses was a murderer. Judah was a slave trader. David was a murderer. Jacob was a thief and a con artist. That Paul was a murderer. You're seeing a theme here. Peter denied Jesus 3 times in one day, and he was hanging out with Jesus every single day. Still denied him. Samson was a murderer. On and on and on we could go. But the Bible shows us this life is not going to be easy. It's just not. We're going to fall. It's going to happen time and time and time and time again. And I'll go one step further. If you're a Christian or you know a Christian and they think that they don't sin, here's what the Bible has to say about that. This is 1 John 1:8-9. Start with verse 8. If we claim we have no sin, we are only fooling ourselves. We are not living in the truth. It stinks, but it's true. If you think you're not sinning, you're living in la-la land. It is just not happening. But the good thing is that the Bible also shows us that time and time and time again, that when we turn back to God, he is there. He is ready to accept us with open arms, give us a big hug, throw a party for us. My son was lost, but now he is found. This is 1 John 1:9, the very next verse. Because if we confess our sins to him, he is faithful and he is just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all of the wickedness, all of the unrighteousness, all of the mess. Goes back to being in communication with God, resting in his love. We all struggle with that doubt at some point or another. But what that is, it is the heart of evil that is lying to us, saying, you know, you've done it now. God can't love you. You know, if you just try a little bit harder, then God would really love you. You should feel so guilty now. I'd even stop bothering. You're not going to get into heaven. It's lies. It's all lies. It's lies to get us down. It's lies to get us to stop trying. It's lies to get us to walk away from Christ. It's lies that keep us from being brave enough to ever talk to anybody about the hope that we have. Because it's like, I can't talk to somebody about that. What if they say, well, I know that you did this thing? It's lies. It's lies that keep us from our relationship with God. But the Bible is clear that he loves us, that God sacrificed his one and only son for us, that we just have to be willing to accept that free gift from him. Okay, look at the clock. I think we have time for one more question. Question number 22. Okay, can you quickly tell me what the biggest difference between Christianity and every other religion is? Like, are you guys serious? Come on. Yeah, quickly, sure, why not? Because people don't spend their whole lives researching this exact thing. Okay, so biggest difference. And I think this is a great question to land on because it really summarizes a big concept of does God, will God love me? That's what most of the questions are struggling with at some point or another. Is he answering my prayers? Does he love me? How do I understand this? So the answer to those questions, the biggest difference, this is how I can boil it down. Here's the biggest difference. In every other religion, you do good works, and then hopefully you're accepted and loved by God. But in Christianity, you are already accepted and loved by God. And then, out of joy, you do good works. That splits it. That splits the whole world in two. That's every religion. You want to go to Muslim. You want to go to Judaism. You want to go to Hinduism. It doesn't matter. That is where you're at. You do the good works, and then karma balances itself out. You do the good works, and then God accepts you. But you are already accepted. You are already loved. He loves us already today for who we are, not who we could be, not what we might be if we can do this thing or that thing. He loves us for who we are today. All we have to do is accept that, accept him, and immediately we begin a relationship with our Creator. That is the power of God's love for us. Let's pray.